It is time now for Aging Well, brought to you today by the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University and underwritten by our friends at Wright and Philippus. And on our conference line, we have Dr. John L. Woodward, who is an associate professor of psychology at Wayne State University, and he is researching memory in aging and Alzheimer's and other factors associated with extreme longevity, living past 100. And there has been an interesting study that has been going on with that, and we're going to find out more about it. Dr. Woodward, good morning and welcome.
Yes, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's our pleasure. I'm delighted because I'm interested in this. I happen to be a senior, and I have been having some memory problems.
Okay.
And I'll be very interested to hear what you have to say about that. But before we go on, one of the things you've been doing is this Georgia Centenarian study where they're studying people over 100. What's this all about, the Georgia Centenarian study?
Sure. This is a study that's founded, that was funded rather by the National Institute on Aging, and it was a the most recent version of it was a 5-year study, but the whole study has actually been in existence for about 20 years now. But in our most recent study, we looked at a population-based sample of centenarians or near centenarians. These were people who were aged 98 and over. In a 44-county area in northern Georgia, so these were counties that surrounded the Athens and Atlanta, Georgia areas, and we really put them through a number of different tests, and we have several different projects that we're looking at, in addition to looking at some possible genetic factors associated with living to 100. We're also looking at mental abilities and memory functioning, for example, in extreme aging. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at personality factors that might be associated with living a long and healthy and happy life.
That sort of thing is if you have a good positive outlook, you'll live longer?
Right. There's actually several personality factors that we've found so far, and I think one of the big things was being able to trust others and having that that degree of trust that people can place in other people was a big factor in our centenarians.
Yeah.
Our centenarians also tended not to worry so much about things. one of my favorite sayings by one of our participants was, if you can't fix it, forget it.
Well, the good news was that if you trust more, you will live longer. The bad news is you trust too much, you're the victim of all kinds of scams.
That's right.
With
that's
seniors,
right.
And that's been a problem. I want to talk more about all of this work that you're doing. We're talking with Dr. John Woodward from the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University. If you have questions for Dr. Woodward, 248-557-3300. But the people who are making this conversation possible are our friends at the leaders in home health care, the folks at Wright and Philippus. Listen.
I'm A.J. Philippus, president of Wright and Philippus. People come through our doors needing items such as portable oxygen, wheelchairs, and diabetic shoes. But when they leave, they have much more than a medical product. They leave with a better quality of life. That's our daily mission at Wright and Philippus, and it's why we'll work harder to provide you with the caring service you'd expect from the area's leading home health care company. Over the past 60 years, we've earned a reputation for providing the best service in the industry. It will always be our company's number one goal and is our commitment to you. If you or a family member need anything for home health care, please visit the Wright and Philippus nearest you. We have more than 30 locations throughout the state to serve you.
Wright and Philippus, first to serve your home health care needs.
Now, I do know that there are a number of us, I'm included, who do not go online. And if you're one of us, you can also, instead of going to firsttoserve.com, you can pick up the telephone and call these wonderful folks toll-free, 1-800-482-0222. All right, Dr. Woodward, was there more that you had to say about the centenarian study?
We also looked at a number of other factors, looking at mental abilities and Alzheimer's type changes with our centenarians, and we're relatively surprised to find that dementia or Alzheimer's disease is not an inevitable consequence of extreme age. We found about one out of every five of our participants in our large sample had really no evidence of memory impairment and no no brain disease associated with Alzheimer's disease at the time of their death.
So we've always kind of thought that the older you get, the more likely it is that you'll have Alzheimer's, and that's true, but it's only likely. It's not inevitable.
That's correct.
I, like you said, four out of five will have it, but one will not. And I hope I'm the one.
That's right. That's right.
Well, it's interesting. How many people over 100 are there in the country?
Well, in the country, it's a little bit hard to get an exact figure, but most estimates put it around somewhere between 50,000 and 60,000 in the United States.
Okay. That's still a pretty fair number compared to years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
When I was a kid growing up back in the 30s, goodness knows, there were not very many people over 100, although my mother was one that would grew to be 100.
Wow.
Which was very nice.
Uh-huh.
We had a heck of a party for her 100th birthday.
Oh.
How about here in Michigan? How many people over 100 in Michigan?
Well, Michigan ranks about ninth in terms of the total number of all centenarians in the United States.
Okay.
That's just in terms of absolute number. If you adjust that for the fact that Michigan is a relatively populated state compared to other states, then we'd actually rank about 40th in the country.
Okay.
And so we have about 15 centenarians in Michigan for every 100,000 people in the population.
That's the way to look at it, the percentage of the population.
Right, right.
And we have 15 for every 100,000, huh?
That's correct.
Well, obviously, not a great many people get to be centenarians.
That's right.
What are the most important factors in getting there?
Well, there's really a lot of different factors. I think you can kind of summarize them down to both nature and nurture.
Okay.
I think there has to be probably some genetic type of contribution, and that's something that we're looking at in our study. Looking at some specific genes that might enable people to live a long and healthy life. But I think also a certain lifestyle is important. Things like exercising, eating the right foods, living in the right geographic location, and some of those personality factors that I mentioned can also be very helpful.
Well, what would be the geographical location? What are you thinking of there?
Well, I think depending on where one lives, the soil content may be richer in some nutrients than others. There might be more or less exposure to the sun, depending on the elevation and the cloud cover and things like that, and the climate.
And if you're living in Los Angeles, you got the smog.
Right.
And that's not a good thing.
That's definitely not a good thing.
Where is the state with the highest percentage of centenarians?
Well, South Dakota and Iowa both have about 32 centenarians, about a little over twice what Michigan has for every 100,000 in the population.
Interesting. I can understand South Dakota because of the clearness of the air, the sparsity of the population. These are factors that I think would probably affect that. On the other hand, Iowa is very much like Michigan, isn't it?
Yes, in a lot of ways. I know there is a lot of farming that goes on in Iowa.
Yeah,
they're kind of the our heartland in a way.
Yeah. Well, my father grew up in Iowa.
Oh wow.
My mother right across the river in Illinois.
So, oh okay.
Obviously, it was a good place for my people to come from.
Absolutely.
Of course, I grew up in Indiana. Is that going to help me or hurt me?
Indiana's about average, I think.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a good agricultural town, so I know about that.
Mm-hmm.
We did. Do we have a call coming in?
They were looking for someone else.
They were okay. Somebody was calling, and I thought, didn't know they were had a question. If you have a question for Dr. Woodward, join with us at 248-557-3300. And you were mentioning personality factors, Doctor. I want to get to that in just a moment and go into it a little deeper. But before we do, if you have problems as you get older, you need an elder law attorney. And earlier this morning, one of our neighbors called and was asking for the telephone number of Jim Schuster, our certified elder law attorney. And I must add that there are only about five or at the most six certified elder law attorneys in the entire state of Michigan. And one of the very best is right here in Southfield. His name is Jim Schuster.
You have aging parents. You're getting near retirement yourself. You find you're helping your parents more and more with everyday matters. You know the day will come when you have to take over. You'll be making doctor's appointments, paying the bills, taking away the keys. You'll be helping them move from your childhood home.
Question for our guest.
This is Jim Schuster, certified elder law attorney. You need legal authority to handle a parent's matters, be they medical or financial or whatever. If you don't have it, you'll have to stand by helpless. They need to get their affairs in order while they can, but they always put it off for later. You need to step up and help them now. One thing is for sure. If you don't do it now while you are thinking of it, it will be too late. Call me, Jim Schuster, certified elder law attorney. If you can't make an appointment for them, ask for my aging parent tip sheet. Call 248-356-3500. That's 248-356-3500.
Thank you, Jim. Dr. Woodward, we have Ruth Ann out in Ypsilanti, which is a lovely place to live, and she has a question for you. Ruth Ann, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Woodward.
Hi. Do you ever have literature or stuff that people can read? Because I do this for it's my job. I'm a nurse assistant, and I take care of a lot of patients like you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I like to hear all the new updates and stuff they're doing.
Oh, sure. We do publish our data. Many of the things that we publish so far have been appearing in some scientific journals. There's also a website that you can probably track down if you look for the Georgia Centenarian Study.
I don't have a computer.
Is there a phone number for that Georgia Centenarian Study?
I don't have the number handy, but
there is one. But could she call the IOG and talk to you when you could get that number for her?
Sure, that would be great.
If anybody has questions, the Institute of Gerontology in Detroit, Ruth Ann, is just has all kinds of information that you would find interesting, and it is available. What's the number down there, Doctor?
It's area code
313-577-2297.
Okay.
That would be a start for all kinds of information. But you can when are you there every day, Doctor?
I'm typically there Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Okay.
Okay.
So you can call Tuesdays and Thursdays and talk to Dr. Woodward. It's okay. John L. Woodward.
Woodard.
Oh, Woodard, pardon me.
That's okay.
Excuse me, it was my fault. I didn't... I'm so used to putting that Woodward because of Woodward Avenue.
Yes, it's one of the curses of living in Detroit.
And I knew some Woodards.
Like my cousin, when he would come to visit, always said he wanted to go cruising up and down Woodard Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Well, forgive me, Doctor. Ruth Ann, okay. Anything else?
Oh, I want to... Is Alzheimer's... what do you call it? Hereditary?
Certain types of Alzheimer's disease are hereditary. There are a couple of genes that have been identified that are very, very infrequent in most people and really not worth testing for the most part. There is another gene that also is involved in heart health as well as Alzheimer's disease, and that particular gene has confers a little bit increased risk if you have a certain variety or a certain flavor of it, but it's still not 100% by any stretch of the imagination. We do have a few leads on a couple of new genes, actually within the last few days, that we're trying to explore right now, and so I really think that something will something genetic will be very soon around the corner.
Okay. Well, tell them people out there when they have a patient or a family member is that, be patient with them because they're very dear people.
That's right.
Amen.
I love all my patients, and I said they may have Alzheimer's, there may be times that it can be combative, or maybe just like we are right now, got it together, but they're very dear.
Or they read names improperly, like a guy I know. Ruth Ann, have a wonderful holiday weekend.
Okay, thank you.
Good to talk to you. We're talking with Dr. John L. Woodard. Isn't that awful? And is that an indication of some kind of a lapse, Dr., whether memory or Alzheimer's or something like that?
No, absolutely not.
Just,
I think it's
just a
forced
slip.
Habit.
I'm glad to hear that. I might have lost a lot of sleep tonight.
Especially in Detroit.
No, you were talking about personality factors and nutritional factors. What other interesting things did you learn from this study?
In terms of some other personality factors that that I, in addition to the ones that I mentioned earlier, I think spirituality, you know, having a high sense of spirituality and religious coping, those were very very prevalent in our centenarian sample, and really virtually everyone in our sample had some degree of spirituality and turning to a higher power.
Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean that people who, let's say, are atheists are going to have problems?
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
I think it really means, you know, it's a way of coping with various things that happen to us in our lives. And I think that for whatever reason, people in that group, you know, cope with various good things and bad things that happen in life,
mm-hmm.
You know, through a spiritual mechanism.
And being spiritual doesn't exactly mean that you have to be in a church or a religion. It means that you have a sense of your belonging in the universe and
right.
attaching to some greater force, however you want to call it. And so it isn't a matter of church and religion as much as it is just your sense of where you belong in life then, huh?
Right, right. Yeah. That's our sense, yeah.
Now, we were talking here about positive things. What about negative things? What about things that can keep a person from living a long life?
Well, I think this whole idea of not being open to new experiences, not living an engaged lifestyle, kind of shutting oneself off from other people or other life experiences, you know, from a personality point of view at least, can be a potential problem in allowing us to live to 100.
Okay. Have you got any hot tips for helping people live to 100?
Well, I don't know. Everybody asks me for the recipe for living to 100. And I don't think that there's a recipe, but there's a recipe book. And so what applies to many people doesn't apply to other people. Nutritionally, for example, we found that a number of our centenarians in that part of the country ate a traditional southern diet.
Oh, really?
Which included collard greens and things which are very healthy for
you. Well,
those
are very healthy, but they have a real dietary problem down there with some of those high-fat foods that they get into.
Exactly. Fried,
but in this case, it may be a good thing, you mean?
Well, I don't know. Nutritionists on the study would dispute whether that's a good thing, but whatever their constitutional makeup, they could they were able to endure whatever bad that the fried things could
be. I'm ordering some sausage gravy and biscuits tomorrow.
he says, glad to hear that. Sausage gravy and biscuits will
be
on
the thank y'all.
Right.
Well, you know, you've also been researching memory.
Yes.
And that's something that, and many of us in this audience are seniors because we've been on the air for 48 years and we've all grown old together. And I want to talk a little bit about that in just a moment. We're talking with Dr. John Woodard. And if you have questions for John, 248-557-3300 is our number. Now, look, talking about being seniors, if you need a helping hand, maybe it's transportation, or grocery shopping, or errands to be run, or laundry pickup and delivery, or bathing, or grooming. Maybe you can't get out. You need medical help, a doctor, a dentist, maybe a nurse like Ruth Ann, or a podiatrist, or prescription delivery. How is now? That's House Calls on Wheels. And How provides both non-medical and medical services in your home. All medical services are covered by Medicare and most private insurance plans. And in addition, House Calls on Wheels is now offering in-home hairstyling and cutting for as low as $35, whether it's for you or for a loved one. Ask about it. Call House Calls on Wheels toll-free for further information. 1-888-489-8980. That's 1-888-489-8980. And Ike Engelbaum, who is the gentleman who owns House Calls on Wheels, is going to have the radio show following us in about 8 minutes. Ike will be talking about SOS, speaking of senior strategies. And one of his guests is very interesting, Henry Johnson, the chairman of the board of Presbyterian Villages of Michigan, and Joanne Robinson, the senior vice president of operations there, will be describing innovative ways that the 24 villages they oversee provide elder-centered care throughout Michigan. That should be most interesting, coming up at 11 o'clock. Now, Dr. Woodard, let's talk about memory. What is functional brain imaging, and what types of information does that provide?
Well, we're using a new technological advance to try to study brain functioning, and it's called functional brain imaging. There's really a variety of different techniques that have been used to look at brain function. But basically, these types of techniques really help us to identify what parts of the brain are active during certain types of mental tasks. So they can, in essence, well, it's not quite true. They almost allow us to take a picture of a thought.
Yeah, I've been following a lot of that work. It's been getting bigger and bigger on imaging these days.
Yeah.
Now, several of your past studies have used recognition of famous names as a way to evaluate memory function. What's so special about famous names, and how can they be used to assess memory?
Well, I think famous names in particular are particularly good because most people seem to be very tuned in to popular culture, and for some reason we have this fascination with following the lives of celebrities, and I think that's given rise to so many of the magazines that are devoted to just that topic. What's interesting about famous names in particular is if I say a particular name like Frank Sinatra, it produces an almost automatic recollection of a variety of facts about Frank Sinatra. You know how you know Frank Sinatra through perhaps knowing his songs or his movies, aspects of his life and things like that. I think in terms of being a very easy type of memory task, people don't have to really try very hard at recognize names that they've learned at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
The other
and if they don't remember these people or don't have recollections about them, that is an indication that they're having a memory problem?
Well, you know, we find this task to be relatively easy, and mm-hmm. it's actually not so much a ability or inability to recall the names, but it's more a function of what the brain does during that recognition task.
Mm.
And so that's what our functional brain imaging research is focused on, is what is the brain doing while people are recognizing these famous names.
Oh, okay, so you're doing the MRI or whatever it's called while you're asking these questions.
Exactly.
And getting the image
of what the brain
is doing. I just read recently an article that meditation helps memory. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I think it certainly is a way to reduce stress. Meditation has been a very popular way to help improve memory. I think in some ways it can enhance. Some studies have shown that it enhances blood flow to certain regions of the brain.
Yeah, that's what this article was talking about.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, they said you should do something like around 20 minutes a day,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
a couple of 10 or 12 minute sessions, and you're going to be a lot better off.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it doesn't help your memory, you're going to feel better.
That's right. That's right.
Of course, there are all kinds of ways to do meditation, too. I won't get into all of that. Tell me a little bit about this recent study, because you've talked to all kinds of people locally. What types of participants are you studying, and what did you find out?
Well, in our study, we enrolled 78 healthy people between ages around the 60s and the 70s. And we put them through a fairly detailed evaluation, looking at memory and other thinking abilities. And everybody was absolutely normal, performing very, very well, had no particular problems whatsoever. And we did our famous name recognition task while they were undergoing the functional MRI scan. And then we followed them for 18 months. We brought them back a year and a half later. And we did more tests of memory and thinking skills. We found about 30% of our sample showed a significant decline in their mental abilities. They weren't impaired for the most part, but they had shown a significant drop from their earlier performance 18 months earlier. And when we went back to look at their fMRI scans when they first started the study, we found that the people who showed a no significant decline, the people who were stable, actually activated several key brain areas involved in memory functioning to a very great extent. But the people who showed the cognitive decline, they didn't activate those areas, even though they were performing the task adequately, and even though they were they had no significant, or they had no impairment in memory, just a decline in memory functioning.
You know, I don't know whether you've ever heard it, but we have a product that we advertise on the air that is purported to help memory, and they've had great results with it. And I wondered if you were familiar. They used something from jellyfish, and it was a University of Wisconsin professor that did the investigation on this, and they call it Prevagen. Have you heard about that?
I have heard of Prevagen, but I'm not up to the minute on the scientific results with it.
Yeah, they've had great results from the people who, you know, returned the stories of using the product, and it has been very good. I just wondered if you would...
Something to do with proteins in the jellyfish.
Proteins in the jellyfish, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully you will come up with wonderful answers for all these problems in the very near future. And when you do, I want to have you back and talk some more about it, because this has been very interesting. Trouble is, we're out of time.
Okay.
Dr. Woodard, thank you very much. Have a wonderful Memorial Day.